John Schneider is music director for the Grammy Award-winning ensemble Partch. That's P-A-R-T-C-H. And their namesake is the one-of-a-kind composer Harry Partch. He lived from 1901 to 1974, without a doubt one of the most original composers of all time. Now, the Partch Ensemble has released a brand new album of works by Harry Partch. It's called Sonata Dementia, and John Schneider has joined us to talk about it. Welcome, John.
Thank you.
I think it's safe to say that many of our listeners may not be familiar with Harry Partch and his work, so can you give us an introduction to Harry Partch, to somebody perhaps who has never heard his music before?
Sure. This is a gentleman who lived in the middle of the 20th century and had a vision of music that was like none other. The music he heard in his head, the music that he knew was possible, could not be played on the musical instruments that existed at the time. So he built his own. He's literally a do-it-yourself person. He also didn't have enough notes in the octave. A piano has 12 notes per octave. He ended up with using 43 notes per octave, and of course had to create his own instruments to make it. So that's the nuts and bolts of how he did it. Why he did it was this incredible music that I had certainly never heard before, and most people hadn't either. They call them American mavericks now, American composers who go off the beaten track. Well, that's Harry Partch.
Yeah, I think he definitely broke the mold as far as even mavericks go. Listening to the music on this recording, it's all, I have to say, it's all very, very listenable, although it sounds like it comes from a completely different world to what we're used to. And part of that, I think, must be because of the instruments and the sounds of the invented instruments, but also something about his language and his harmonies. There's a sense of wry humor that seems to go through all the works. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about his musical style, even apart from all the extra instruments and things that he did with it.
Style is an interesting question. One of the reasons why he made all of those notes was very simply, he wrote an essay, and by the way, he was very literate and a very good writer. He suggested that artists, if they want to use the color red, they can shade it any way they want by mixing in a little white, a little black, a little blue, whatever, to get exactly the right shade. Musicians, when they want a C, the parallel to an artist's red, they only get one. They can't go a little bit higher or a little bit lower. They can't shape it the way an artist can, and that's what he really wanted to do. So what ended up happening, he got a bunch of notes that no one had heard before. It's funny, one of his first recordings that was reviewed, I think it was in High Fidelity, someone said it sounds like folk music from Mars.
Yeah, I totally get it.
Meaning, just you hit it on the head. It's listenable, it's familiar, but not quite. There's something a little different about it. And it's because the harmonies are very different. They're easy to listen to. They are sometimes far more in tune than anything you've ever heard. And the dissonances are exquisitely different. They're dissonant, and yet they're clear and elegant at the same time. And as you mentioned, he's got an incredible sense of humor, which is what got me hooked about him in the first place.
Well, yeah. And hearing the voice involved, the spoken text that he often uses in these pieces, a lot of humor comes out in that as well. You have this fantastic recording that was uncovered of him performing at the Eastman School back in the 1940s. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, he was in Chicago, of all places, and decided that, you know, people were not paying attention. He started doing lecture demos back in the 1930s to say, hey, listen to this new music. I have a new way of speaking. He called it speech music. And he was roundly ignored. He got a few reviews, that sort of thing. Well, he went to the Midwest and said, I'm going to start over again. And he started doing lectures back east. He did one up at Bennington. He did one at Rochester. And that's what this was all about. He was trying to tell people about this new style of music. In fact, this performance of Barstow, which is the first one we have of the solo version, because heavens knows there's four or five different versions of this piece. This was part of a lecture demonstration where he was talking to theory students, and he showed how his then only four musical instruments worked. And I got to tell you, I'm also releasing in the next year the entire lecture demonstration.
Oh, wow.
Which is going to be really, it's really exciting. And you can tell when he's, the audience loves him. He's funny, he's charming, and a great performer.
11. To hell with it, I'm going to walk.
Well, and Barstow itself, those hobo inscriptions are sometimes hilarious. And
you know. Oh, yeah. I got to tell you, that's the piece that got me hooked on Harry Parch.
Yeah.
It was Barstow because it was so funny. I mean, since when is serious music funny, if you catch my drift?
Right, right. Talk a little bit about, you mentioned getting hooked on Parch. I mean, when did that happen for you, and what was your development as somebody who carried on his legacy, as it were?
I heard the music first as a graduate student, and it made no sense to me. I had no idea what was going on. And then there were a couple of books published at the end of the 80s, early 90s, his biography. And also I had interest. I had written a book about all contemporary music that was written for guitar in the 20th century. And I knew about this piece called Barstow because I had heard the big ensemble version of it. And then I realized all of a sudden, wait a minute. I could do this because I met the man who owned the instruments, and I said, oh, I'm so sad. I'll never be able to play Barstow because there's no guitar in it. He said, what do you mean? There's a solo guitar version of it. I said, you're kidding. Give me the score. And he had no idea how to do it, but he said, here's the score. Good luck. And it took me a couple of years to figure out. So that's what got me started. And then I thought, okay, I've got one Parch guitar. Didn't he make two or three? And I made another Parch guitar, but then I needed a Diamond Marimba to go with that to play some of these intrusions that are on this album. And after that, I was hooked.
Well, you have to explain what a Diamond Marimba is for folks who don't know.
A standard marimba is a series of wooden blocks that are resonated. It sort of looks like a piano keyboard, but made out of wood. And it goes from left to right, low to high. His diamond marimba is the same kind of blocks, but they're laid out shaped in a diamond. There's one at the top, then two, then three, then four, then five, then six, five, four, three, two, and one. So it's diamond shaped, and they're terraced. The one block is furthest from you is the highest, and the single block towards you is the lowest. So there you go. It's literally diamond-shaped.
It's sort of like a typist who has a different keyboard arrangement all of a sudden.
Yeah. You go up and down and left and right.
Yeah. Tell us about some of the other Harry Parch instruments that you have on this CD, because I'm looking at a list, and there's some interesting names here, like Spoils of War. There's one that's Boo, B-O-O. I can't imagine what that would be. Can you tell us?
I know. Spoils of War began as a single bass marimba note, a long organ pipe with a wooden key on the top that he used. And then he put a wood block on the front of it. And then he wanted some jingly sort of a sound. So he took a whole bunch, seven in fact, artillery shells, pure brass artillery shells, and cut them down to make bells. Basically. Uh-huh. And they're microtonally tuned. There's seven of them, but those seven just go between the C and C sharp on a piano. So they're very close indeed. Huh. So that's what made it the Spoils of War, because, of course, that's exactly what it was. It also had hanging off the ends cloud chamber bowls, which were huge 12-gallon Pyrex carboys, which are basically water jugs, but used in scientific experiments, that are cut in half and hung, and they become these huge glass gongs. And there's one of the instruments is called cloud chamber bowls, where there are 12 of these hanging from a big rack. A boo, that's short for bamboo marimba.
Oh,
if you've ever seen a tongue drum where there is a resonator and has a tongue cut out of it and you hit it and the tongue waggles up and down and then the box underneath it resonates it. Well, you can do that with one tube of bamboo. He did it with 64 tubes of bamboo, and that became a bamboo marimba, and boo for short.
Fantastic.
I don't know, makes sense, right?
Yeah. Well, the noises that they make, though, I mean, it sounds otherworldly, but it also makes sense in the context of his music. I want to talk about some of the works that you have on here that you're performing, starting with the title track, Sonata Dementia, which I guess has gone through a couple of different iterations.
Yes, as does all of Harry's music. Because he had to build his own musical instruments, he wrote for what he had for. Then he would build a new instrument and write a new piece and then say, wait a minute, the one I just wrote, that would sound good with this new, with the Diamond Marimba, and he would rewrite it. So Sonata Dementia began as an exploration of all the harmonies he could create on a retuned reed organ, a pump organ, which is called the chromalodeon. So he wrote these series of chords and then started writing melodies and things on top of it, including instruments he was in the midst of making. He hadn't even heard them yet, like a bass marimba, which has 11 notes, and the keys are so big and they're so high off the ground you have to stand on a pedestal to play them. And he made this piece as an exploration of different kinds of sounds, harmonies, rhythms, melodies. But he was also making fun of this newfangled thing called psychoanalysis, which was kind of a big thing after World War II.
Right.
So the movements are called Abstraction and Delusion. Then there's Scherzo Schizophrenia, and finishing with Allegro Paranoia.
Now, the last minute of the piece, and if you don't mind, I'd like to actually play it here so we can hear it. He goes into this sort of an almost patter song.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah. Just to give listeners a short little sample here of the kind of humor that was in his work.
Mumbo jumbo, hocus pocus, hoity toity, hotsy totsy, easy doozy, hoochie coochie, hinky dippy, heepy jibby, harum scarum, helpless scatter, honky tonky, palsy palsy, lovey dovey, pitcher, patter, teacher, totter, tootsie, wootsie, boogie woogie, piggy wiggy.
And it goes on. It reminds me a little bit of like a Dr. Demento track. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, who's doing the vocals on that recording?
That's T.J. Troy, who's the bass marimba player. So he's actually playing bass marimba while reciting that wonderful line of alliterative nonsense. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like juggling, I imagine.
Well, that's kind of what Parch's music playing it is like, because he really suggested that people should be able to play anything and do anything on stage, because as soon as you walk on stage, you are a theatrical entity. He just hated seeing people sitting there dressed in tight shoes and dressed like penguins counting bars, right, on an orchestral stage. He said, no, people, you're there, so be there.
Talk about these 12 intrusions, because this is sort of a song cycle. Again, it's that speaking voice kind of thing, almost like a Sprechstimme going on. But the texts come from such diverse sources.
Pretty amazing.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. He started life, actually. His new style of music started with a series of pieces called the Lyrics of Li Po, which were settings of medieval Chinese poetry, and he accompanied himself on the adapted viola. He created this new scale because the scales that exist on the piano and all standard instruments don't have those in-between notes. So when I'm speaking to you, my voice slowly gets up higher in pitch and then goes down. That's part of the expression. And, of course, Schoenberg understood this, too. So he wrote Sprechstimme, a speak-sing that captured the essence of human connectivity through conversation, but also musicalized it. So that's what these are all about. They're not, they're songs, but I'm not singing. I'm intoning. But the exact pitch range is written out very, very precisely.
You use the word intoning, which I think also speaks to another element of Parch's music. It's theatrical, but it has a real kind of formality to it, in the sense of like Greek tragedy or Greek theater. Does that resonate with you?
Well, very. You hit it on the head, because Parch was very interested in ancient Greek music and how it was performed. Of course, nobody really knows, but he suggested it. And in fact, these 12 intrusions start with two studies on ancient Greek scales to sort of set the tune. Very much so. It is a theatricalization of text. It's acting with pitch.
Well, there's so much to talk about. It's such a rich album of music and a wonderful discovery of that live performance of Harry Parch in the 1940s. The album is called Sonata Dementia from the Grammy Award-winning ensemble Parch, performing music by their namesake, Harry Parch. You can find that at all the usual media outlets, including our website. We'll have it at WGTE.org. And you can visit the Parch Ensemble online. That's Parch, PARTCH.LA. You can also see some pictures, I guess, of those instruments there.
And videos, because really, I tell you what changed my life was actually being in front of the instruments and experiencing it. The second best thing is seeing them being performed. The pieces you... It's always best to be in the room for anything, whether it's Beethoven or Parch, of course. But it's really great to see what these instruments look like while they're being played.
John, we haven't said a whole lot about you, but you're a guitarist. You're many, many things. A radio host, indeed. No intimidation there. But if folks want to read a little bit more about you and get to know you better, you have a website, right? Can you tell us what that is?
Sure, that's johnschneider.la. Guess where I live. And that's johnschneider.
John Schneider, thanks so much for joining us here on FM 91.
Great to meet you.